Welcome to MetaStrategy's Forum on World-Class IT. I'm Peter High, and I'm pleased to welcome Stephen Gold to the broadcast. Steve is a Senior Vice President and Chief Information Officer of CVS Caremark Corporation. In this role, since July 2012, he's the company's Senior Technology Executive with responsibility for all information systems and technology operations, including information technology strategy, application development, and technology infrastructure. Steve was previously Senior Vice President and CIO of Avaya, and held similar roles at GSI Commerce and Merck & Company, where he supported its human health and vaccine division. Steve also served as Senior Vice President and Chief Information Officer of Medco Health Solutions Incorporated from July 1993 to September of 2003, when it was a subsidiary of Merck. Steve holds a Bachelor of Science degree in Computer Science from St. John's University. I recently caught up with Steve by phone in his Woonsocket, Rhode Island office, and our conversation primarily focused on world-class IT Principle 1, people, as Steve discussed his approach to hiring and Principle 4, IT and business partnerships, as he reviewed the ways in which he's expanded responsibilities that his CIO role entails, as well as a variety of other topics. The Forum on World-Class IT would like to thank Red Hat, the world's leading provider of open-source solutions, for being our corporate sponsor. Red Hat is a catalyst in communities of customers, contributors, and partners creating better technology the open-source way. Connect to an ecosystem of innovation at redhat.com today to learn more. Steve Gold, welcome to the Forum on World-Class IT. It's wonderful to have you participating in the forum. I thought we'd begin with an overview of your current role at CVS. Can you talk to us a bit about the responsibilities of Chief Information Officer?
You know, at the highest level, my role is to oversee and to drive the IT transformation at CVS Caremark so that we can continue to win with what we call ability and agility. So when we talk about ability, it's, you know, the company's brought together what we believe is an unmatched breadth of assets and expertise to drive innovation. And, you know, specifically, you know, we own and operate the CVS Pharmacy retail stores that everybody knows. We own and operate CVS Caremark, a very large and successful prescription benefit management service, and then own and operate our MinuteClinic. And, you know, the ability and the expertise that we have to not only operate those assets independently, but more importantly, strategically going forward, how to combine those assets in a unique way that delivers unique value is kind of the ability aspect of this platform, if you will. The second piece of it, agility, is kind of rooted in the fact that while we've laid out a clear direction and long-term strategy, particularly around combining these assets in a unique way, the healthcare marketplace is undergoing significant change. And so that means that we have to maintain the agility and the nimbleness necessary to respond to those changes while continuing to deliver strong results and, you know, keep our commitments to our customers. So, again, at the highest level, my job is to deliver the IT transformation that is aligned with the business strategy built on that theme of continuing to win with ability and agility. More specifically, you know, obviously I'm the SVP and CIO here at the company and the most senior IT executive at the company, and I'm a member of our executive committee, the team that governs the organization. And in terms of responsibilities, I'm responsible for all aspects of technology enterprise-wide. And in addition to that, we're starting to build out some shared services beyond just IT functions that, you know, the company is finding valuable and consuming. So an example would be, we're building an enterprise project office. So part of my transformation that I'll talk to you about is how we've transformed project management in the company. And now not only are we using those techniques for IT projects, but for business projects as well.
That's fantastic.
We're doing some piloting now with a quality office. Again, starting it inside the IT organization, but eventually, you know, using it to engineer quality into all of the work that we do. And then the third area that is kind of, you know, nascent and developing, and again, it's not a surprise based on your questions, is around a data office.
Right.
So a partnership formed between my most senior technical data leader and his corresponding leader on the business side, so that you have two in the box and they're jointly, you know, developing kind of the next generation data strategy for the corporation. So that's kind of a high level overview of my job.
Steve, you've had an interesting journey along the course of your career. You began as a programmer, worked all the way up to chief information officer, now at multiple major corporations. Can you talk a bit about that journey?
I started my career as a systems programmer, and I worked through the ranks and basically have done every job of every person in an IT organization. What that allows me to do is to kind of understand and to empathize with what each of my staff does. In addition to that, I've been fortunate enough also to kind of be a business leader. I founded the first and the largest PBM internet pharmacy in the world at Medco.
Oh, wow.
And I also had the luxury of running the product development shop for GSI Commerce. So I was CIO there as well as CTO. And what that's allowed me to do, I think, is to have a fairly unique perspective here, which is, if you look at CIOs, you know, a lot of them are, they're either technologists or, in some cases, companies choose business leaders in the CIO role, you know, to make sure that they're more aligned with the strategic business functions.
Yes.
My belief is that a CIO needs to be both a strong business leader as well as a great technologist. I believe that both are necessary. Neither one is sufficient. And it's what I call the art of the and. So that's kind of my, you know, my platform, the shadow that I try to cast on the organization.
Steve, to what extent do you feel that between the technical capabilities versus the business capabilities, do you have a perspective on which is easier to learn later? And the reason I ask that is obviously a lot of technical people have engineering or computer science undergraduate degrees. They work their way up, as you described, as having, you know, many, if not all, of the positions in the IT department. And for great ones like yourself, who've had the curiosity and the ambition to break out of that mold and get out of the black box that for so long surrounded the IT department to develop business acumen, is that the better route for somebody who's going to have to capitalize on the art of the and, or is there a path for a person who does not have a technical background in terms of education and in terms of getting into the guts of the IT department, the more junior levels, to learn sufficiently to be able to take on the kinds of responsibilities you're describing?
You know, it's a really great question. And I wish there was a simple answer to it, because I can make arguments on both sides.
Right, right.
If you put a gun to my head and said, I need an answer, you know, one answer, I would probably say it would be easier to learn the business skills than to learn the technical skills, just because they're so darn specific. However, I can make the counter argument that says, you know, if you've grown up as a business leader, and you wind up in an IT role that is a more senior role. So in other words, the number of steps up to become the chief information officer, you really don't need all of that technical background. So you can make the arguments in both directions.
Yeah.
I think a lot of it has to do with the company that you're working for and how important the computer science and engineering functions are to that company and to the job. The more I think about it, it's so dependent on the company and it's so dependent on the individual's journey line. Looking back, if I would have started as a business major, I don't think I would have the technical understanding that I have today.
Steve, as somebody who has had a first 100 days at CIO in such a wide array of environments, I'd be interested to know what is common, what are the first things that you always have done versus those things that maybe you've improved based on just having more and more experience and knowledge. So there's some, you know, maybe there are things you've done in this job that you wish you had done in past ones, having learned what you have.
Yeah, again, that's great. Great question. Obviously, great insight. So in terms of process, and I'm sure this, you know, what I'm about to lay out for you is not unique, but hopefully some of the details are of incremental value.
Yeah.
You spend the first 30 days, give or take, you know, gathering data, interviewing peers, interviewing your staff, interviewing key stakeholders that, you know, can provide you with insight into how the organization operates and identify where our strengths are and where our opportunities are to enhance. So the first 30 days, give or take, is really kind of raw data gathering, if you will, and maybe some organizing of data and thoughts. You know, the next 30 days then are spent around formulating some hypotheses, and those hypotheses begin to fall into the categories that I just touched on. You know, where are the organization's strengths? Where are the opportunities to enhance tactically? And then where do we need to move in order to be aligned with the future strategy of the company? And then what I like to do is to put those hypotheses not only in those three buckets, but also kind of like a 3x3 matrix, if you will. So strengths, opportunities to enhance tactically, opportunities to enhance strategically. And then for each one of them, what are the people implications, what are the process implications, and what are the technology implications? And then over the next 30 to 40 days, start to build the execution plan and begin the transformation. So that's kind of the high-level framework. And, you know, your question about, so what are the things that, you know, I've learned from doing it a couple of times across different industries. First and foremost is people. You know, you have to have the right people in the right jobs in order to facilitate the change and the outcome. Because if you don't have the right people, the right skills, more than anything else, that will rate on your progress. So while we talk about being a technologist, or we talk about being an expert in process, the most important part of the job, I think, for all CIOs is really the people aspects of it. I look at the people's technical skills. I look at their how they think, what their attitudes are, you know, the shadow that they cast, and then, you know, kind of make whatever changes are necessary to align the staff with the roadmap that we've established.
Mm-hmm.
So what comes out of that is what I call a series of strategic pillars. And these are the changes to people, process, and technology that ultimately we're going to execute against and to kind of transition, provide linkage to some of your other questions, ultimately things that we're going to measure our performance against. So you gather all this data, you build your hypothesis, then you got to go back on the road with your customers and with your employees and communicate back to them, okay, so here's what I've heard, here's what I've seen, here are my hypotheses, here's my plan. A, did I miss anything? B, do I need to adjust anything? And, you know, once we have alignment, this is what we're going to be executing against, and this is what we're going to be reporting our performance against. So at the highest level, what I came up with was, you know, five strategic pillars.
Okay.
First one is around best-in-class delivery. You know, you look at our industry, it's a very competitive industry. The rate of change, both in terms of amount of change and the significance of change, with the changes in healthcare regulation in the United States, as well as changes in technology, I don't believe there's been a time in our history where the rate of change and the significance of change in this space has been so significant. Therefore, the companies that execute well against it will be the victors. So the first one is best-in-class delivery. The next one is around operational excellence in project delivery and portfolio management. So one of the things that I've learned and patterns that I've seen in the jobs that I've had is, you know, there are different ways to run projects and different ways to manage a portfolio. And the model that I like to use, even though it's with predominantly with my staff, and I'll get to that more in a minute, is a model that follows more a professional service model than, you know, maybe what we would categorize as the conventional model of an internal IT organization. Achieving excellence in project delivery and portfolio management. So that means not just delivering one project on time, on budget, at the right level of quality, but delivering the entire portfolio of projects on time, on budget, at the right level of quality. Third strategic pillar is around strategic sourcing. You know, I have a philosophy around when to use external labor and when not to use external labor. We had to make some adjustments to that model inside the company, especially to prepare ourselves, for the future.
You indicated you have sort of a model in mind in terms of, you know, when to use external resources. Is that independent of company? Is that sort of like based on situations that apply across companies? Is it dependent upon, you know, the specific scenario or situation that the company finds itself in? How well codified is that?
I think that the model can be consistently applied across companies. I've done it in internet outsourcing space. I've done it in a pure play technology space, and here now in healthcare. And what varies is the degree to which the percentage of the ingredients are the same, the recipe is the same.
Right.
So, you know, you're always going to need some percentage of external labor. The thing that varies is by company, by industry, by to what degree the company is focused on growth as opposed to, you know, stability or efficiency. It's going to dictate how the recipe needs to be shifted. You know, an example would be if you have a company that is about to embark on a gigantic transformational effort, and you need your best people, the best employees in the company focused on that, and basically you're just going to stabilize, a portion of your existing portfolio, those non-critical activities would be a great candidate to outsource, to hand over to people outside the company, assuming you didn't have an infinite amount of internal talent. There's another example, which is maybe there's a small initiative that is very, very focused, and the expertise is difficult to get. There's a case where you would want to use consultants strategically, including, you know, what the transition plan is to bring that knowledge acquisition back into the company. What I've seen is, in some cases, and I realize what I'm about to say may not win me a lot of fans with consulting companies, but I've seen is, in some cases, an over-dependence on external labor. It's, you know, it's kind of easier to get them. It's easier to hire.
Exactly.
But you pay a premium for it. More importantly than that, the knowledge, kind of flies out the window. So then the next piece of it is around strategic architecture. So that would be the next strategic pillar. And, you know, as we execute on the strategy to take these assets that we have and combine them in a unique way to create a fully integrated enterprise experience for our customers, that means the way systems need to be built will also be different. Having a single identifier for a customer, regardless of how they interact with the company, would allow us to create a unique experience with that individual regardless of whether they're buying, you know, shampoo in the front of the store, maybe, you know, going to the Minute Clinic for a, you know, biometric screening, getting prescriptions filled in the retail pharmacy, getting prescriptions filled through our mail service pharmacy. You know, the ability to have a unique identifier that identifies or represents that individual across all of those systems is an important asset. In order to do that, it compels you to construct that service, if you will, globally. In other words, that now becomes a enterprise service and invoke the service locally. Things like a patient identifier, which was the right thing to do for the company and other companies like ours historically. Those things were built as part of the segmented systems historically.
Yes.
Now, going forward, we need to say, you know what? We need to integrate all those identifiers. That needs to be a common service that is built by a team that focuses on that common service, including the quality of the information and the accuracy of the information, and then makes that service available for consumption by the segmented systems. And then the last one is around talent. You know, we have to create and facilitate an environment where we attract, motivate, and retain the top talent that's possible. It's a great company to work for. It does attract great people. And we need to surround that with rewards and recognition programs and career pathing and top talent programs so that we get the very best of every individual that are part of our team. Because like I said earlier, out of those three legs of the stool, if you will, people, process, technology, the people piece of it is most important.
Exactly, yeah.
What metrics do you use to gauge progress?
For every one of those pillars I laid out, there are a series of deliverables, and it goes into everybody's goals and objectives, every single person in the IT organization.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a dashboard that we use to report progress and status against these on a monthly basis. So that's kind of the quantitative aspect of it. And then over to the maybe a more qualitative aspect. So I'll throw another acronym at you. I've developed a framework that I call the ACT framework, A-C-T. And what ACT stands for is accountability, collaboration, and tenacity. So the metrics against those strategic pillars are the what we've achieved and how we do with our ACT framework, how accountable are we when we engage with our customers? How collaborative are we when we engage with our customers? And how tenacious are we at punching through, you know, inevitably things that are unforecasted that, you know, may get in the way of a project that we have to not allow to get in the way of a project or a commitment. So what I look for is, you know, how many people in my organization are getting recognized either by their management or, more importantly, by my customers for demonstrating those personality characteristics?
And the ACT framework that you described, is that something that you've developed over the years? Is it a more recent development? I can certainly see how the ideas, of course, apply across companies, and it provides a great orienting framework for your teams. And the description you just described, I could see as, you know, you saying, look, these are the ways in which, you know, our team is going to be evaluated, the way that we're going to determine how pleased the rest of the organization is with our performance, the way in which our own evaluation process internally will work, and so on, since, of course, these are concepts that are not industry or company specific. Is it something that was, in a more recent role that occurred to you, or maybe a bit about the genesis of that?
Yeah, sure. So, you know, the ingredients I've developed, let's call it over the past 10 years of managing IT organizations. You know, to be totally transparent with you, Peter, the marketing of it, if you will,
uh-huh.
is the piece that I developed at CVS Camel. So I knew that you had to have all these characteristics, but I never fully, and we would develop them and we would talk about them and we would encourage people to demonstrate them kind of individually over the years. But I realized that the packaging was incomplete. So I spent some time in my first year here kind of making that message more mature and coming up with the acronym. We, brand different parts of the company. I use it in the branding, in the IT branding. You know, the answer is the ideas have been formulated, let's say, over the past 10 years, but honestly, kind of polishing up the message and making it something that is easier for people to understand and consume is a recent development. And I feel really good about it. I think, quite honestly, we've gotten better outcomes here, and it has to be attributable to obviously a really good staff, but also to just me kind of maturing the message for the troops.
Steve, I'm also interested in your approach to strategy. Can you talk a bit about how you formulate IT strategy, how you ensure there's appropriate linkage with the rest of the organization's plans, and how you've acted upon those plans?
The strategic pillars, for instance.
Yeah, I mean, those are the building blocks for the strategy. And in terms of how we've progressed since then, we are on or above plan for every single one of these. I mean, the system is really working well. I think my peer group, the remainder of the corporation's leadership team, is pleased with the work that we're doing. This industry, as you might be aware, the busiest time for this industry is the first couple of weeks of January. It's what we call welcome season. It's when the majority of new plans or plans are put into effect for patients.
Yep.
And it's a very, very busy time. It's our defining moment. And, you know, the feedback that we've gotten from the leadership of the company, so my peers, the president of the PBM, and more importantly, the feedback that our customers are providing us with and industry analysts are providing us with, is this has been the best welcome season in the history of the company.
Wow.
So, you know, what's nice is discrete strategies are not only delivering what they're supposed to deliver independently, but when you roll them up, it's translating into something that is clearly becoming visible to our internal customers as well as our external customers.
Well, good. I do want to be mindful of time. The only other thing that I really wanted to talk about was the sort of trends that you see, Steve. And I think, you know, we covered so many of them here. I don't necessarily think we need to take too much more time, but maybe there are a couple of just sort of tags here on the end that we can note.
Yeah, I mean, there's one that I think is an intersection of some of the things we spoke about that I find most exciting. And it's what we call kind of the retailization of healthcare, right? So you have a couple of things going on, right? You have healthcare reform in the United States, which results in, amongst other things, a significant shift of responsibility of decision making to the individual through exchanges or other mechanisms, high deductible health plans, structures that are altering where the responsibility lies. When you combine that with the consumerization of everything, it's a marriage made in heaven. In terms of, you know, where would be a cool place to work as a, you know, doing leading edge technology work that helps humankind? So that's what excites me, the intersection of probably the most significant change, like I spoke about earlier, in the healthcare industry that we've ever seen, combined with a technological landscape that is empowering people more than it ever has. That intersection of those two ingredients is tremendously exciting.
It's a fantastic vignette, and as you say, it sort of ties up several of the conversation points we've already covered. This has been great, Steve. I really do appreciate your time.
Thank you very much, Peter.
The Forum on World Class IT would like to thank Red Hat, the world's leading provider of open source solutions, for being our corporate sponsor. Red Hat is a catalyst in communities of customers, contributors, and partners creating better technology the open source way. Connect to an ecosystem of innovation at redhat.com today to learn more. Listen to a podcast in a series we call MetaStrategy's Forum on World-Class IT. If you like what you've heard, please consider reading my book, World-Class IT, Why Businesses Succeed When IT Triumphs, published by Josie Bass, a division of Wiley Press, in December of 2009. Both the book and the Forum on World-Class IT offer stories from a wide range of top IT leaders relating to MetaStrategy's five principles of world-class IT. The five principles are as follows. Principle one is people, and it's really the foundational principle. Without the right people doing the right jobs at the right time, it'll be nearly impossible to achieve excellent performance. The second principle is infrastructure. We like to say that this is the principle that separates proactive organizations from reactive ones. If infrastructure is not reliably performing its tasks, the IT organization will become stuck in reactive mode, consistently fighting fires. If systems and hardware and networks and so on work reliably, then a larger portion of the organization can think about the future. The third principle is project and portfolio management. This is the engine through which new capabilities can be brought to bear on behalf of the company. It is important to ensure that projects are delivered on time, on budget, and on target, and that the portfolio collectively supports the objectives of the business. The fourth principle is IT and business partnerships. It's important that, first and foremost, the different parts of IT, from business analysis to development and QA, through to support and all other aspects of IT, communicate effectively and efficiently. It's equally important, then, that IT develop a partnering relationship with the business that it is a part of. If the three prior principles are done well, then IT should earn a place at the strategy setting table, driving different parts of the business strategy. The fifth and last principle is external partnerships. Outsourcing is becoming a crucial weapon that organizations are employing, and managing these relationships to ensure that value is achieved is critical. In the fourth principle, the organization has learned and contributed to the discussion about what is strategic and what is not. Once that's clear, then it will be easier to determine which aspects of IT might be better managed by external partners or vendors. For more information on these five principles and the sub-principles that are associated with each, please visit our website at www.metastrategy.com, and please share your thoughts and comments by contacting us at feedback@metastrategy.com. And our theme music was written by David Armin. I'm Peter High. Thanks for listening.